Welcome to Roadcase, the podcast that explores the live music experience. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Josh Rosenberg, and I'll be taking you on a journey through in-depth interviews with performers and key people in the industry to explore the magic of live music, how it can be totally transformative for both fans and performers, and we'll look at how they take it all out on the road. It's going to be a great ride, so here we go. Okay, welcome back to Roadcase, everybody. This is your host, Josh Rosenberg. I am so insanely psyched for this episode, episode number 100, the end of season two of Roadcase, featuring an interview with Tom Blankenship of My Morning Jacket. So psyched that you're all here. If you're here for Tom for the first time, welcome to the Roadcase community. And if you're a regular and repeat listener, welcome back. I am so psyched that you're here. So glad that everyone's here. Thanks again for everyone to everyone for your amazing support throughout the course of this year. Like I do for every introduction, I like to remind everyone that there's a number of different ways you can get involved in the Roadcase community. A really easy way is to follow us on the socials. We're at Roadcase Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Another great way to stay in touch is to shoot us an email at info@roadcasepod.com with your comments, criticisms, what have you. Suggestions for guests are great. Thank you, everyone, for sending in your emails. Promise I'll get back to you. And you can find out more information about Roadcase on our website, www.roadcasepod.com. Another great way to support this podcast is to subscribe to Roadcase on your favorite listening platform. For example, if you're on Spotify, just hit that little box that says follow. If you're on Apple Podcasts, that little check mark in the upper right-hand corner, just click that and you're all set. And when you're there, if you could rate and review this podcast, that would be great. An Apple Podcast, just scroll down a little bit, hit a bunch of stars, and maybe write a nice review. It was really appreciated. So I am so psyched, happy, and honored to have Tom Blankenship on Roadcase for this very special episode 100. Tom plays bass in the band My Morning Jacket, which is known as one of the finest live rock shows out there. It's no secret that I'm a huge fan of this band, and I was super honored when Tom said that he'd be here to help me celebrate this big episode number 100. Tom's been with the band longer than anyone except for the founder, Jim James, and with 20 plus years of experience on the road with this band, Tom has seen and experienced it all. The band has a new self-titled album out, released back in October, and I spoke to Tom just at the conclusion of a three-show run at Chicago's Auditorium Theater, which concluded their first major tour in over 4 years. The band took a hiatus in 2018 and only played a few shows prior to this late summer fall tour in 2021. They needed this much deserved break from touring. And when COVID hit, they were already in the studio recording the new album. Now the band's hitting the road again with a renewed sense of vigor and a new sense of purpose. And they're doing 3 nights at Denver's Mission Ballroom for New Year's. And they're setting up some new dates, yet undisclosed, as I understand from this interview, with more touring in 2022, in addition to their one big holiday vacation run coming up in March of 2022. So Tom's a pretty quiet and reserved guy, but you'd never know it because he's right in the middle of this explosive live band on stage. Tom's faced many personal challenges along his long journey to date and has crafted and managed his role in this band with patience, perseverance, and elegance. And now he's hitting the road once again with a renewed sense of excitement to bring the heat and music to Jacket fans, and I couldn't be happier about that. So I'm so glad that everyone is on board for this episode, and thank you so much to everyone for your support throughout this journey with Roadcase during 2021. It means so much to me to have you all here and to have the support of my listeners. I really appreciate that you're all here and appreciate each and every one of you. Thank you so much for being here for this special episode, and I'd like to thank my friend Tom Blankenship for being here for this episode 100 of Roadcase. And here we go. T- Tom, great to see you, man. I'm so happy to have you here. Thanks again for coming on Roadcase, man.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm so psyched to have you here. So, where to start with a band that I love so much? Well, you just came off of the road for your first tour in, God, since like 2017, basically. I mean, who knows? Who the fuck cares how long it was? It seemed like a long time from everyone's perspective, maybe even your own. How do you feel after... having been out there, like what was the feel to get out on tour initially, and what were your expectations?
It felt really good. And I feel like everybody was in the same boat, whether you were on stage or off. Mm-hmm. Was just like a sense of relief and just like all the anticipation that goes behind this waiting to return to normalcy and to get back to shows and doing the things that we all love. It was crazy, but it felt just as good as the expectation that you had would be, if that makes sense. I'm a little tongue tied, but
yeah, well, I think we all are after that.
Yeah. It was a lot to take in, you know, because it wasn't like, I was even traveling a lot before we did the shows. I don't think a lot of us were. So,
right.
It was a lot of reality all at once, you know? Joyful reality.
Yeah. Had you gone to shows yourself or even gone to listen to music and all, just by the way?
No. The first show that I went back to was last Thursday. I finally saw a show here in town in Louisville. The band Real Estate played at, at Z Bar down the street. So that was nice.
Right.
And that was equally, you know, it was like exciting. It was exactly how it was for like being on stage and touring. It was like, this is really exciting, but also like, this feels really weird. You know, like,
yeah,
I have my mask on, but some people don't. And like, is it safe for me to be here? And I'm like, but I was the guy that was on stage and I was around all these people and didn't have a mask. You know, it's like,
you were up
like
into your head, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But
it felt it was such a very emotional moment. I was there at the first show in Charlotte. It was hotter than fuck.
It really was.
Oh my God. I went back to my car right before doors open and it was 105 on the the temperature of my rental car. It was bananas. So I survived that. I drank a lot of water. So that was good. Yeah. You know, I tend to, you know, try to hydrate. You know, you've seen me out there. I need to hydrate.
Yeah. You're doing it right.
It was very exciting, very intense. And I can imagine from your point of view, there must have been did you get jitters? Was there butterflies? What was that kind of like to just come out on that first show?
Yeah, there is always, and this is, you know, pandemic or just, you know, like in 2019 after we had taken a break, or even if it's been a month or two since we've gone out on the road. Mm-hmm. The first show back, I definitely, it's weird. I guess it's kind of like butterflies. It's just like, you know, you talked about like just being in your head, and I definitely have a tendency to do that. And I think that's probably what it is that I'm feeling like, are people still going to care? You know, like I'm expecting, like I'm going to go out there. And I think part of it's like a defense mechanism. Like, I'm going to go out there and what my expectation is that everybody's just going to be like with their arms folded and just kind of like nodding their heads. Like, oh, I can't believe this guy's back up on stage again or something.
This guy again.
Yeah. But I think it's, one of the many protective measures that my mind has to kind of make sure that I'm going to be okay because I'm, you know, pretty shy and reserved guy. So, and I've always told people, ever, you know, that I'm close to, that like playing a show is kind of like, you know, it's kind of like giving a speech in front of all these people, or just like, it's a lot of like social interaction all at once for me. So I think I had to kind of like psych myself up a little bit, or psych myself down. I'm not sure exactly how that works, but
yeah, it's okay.
Yeah.
up or down. I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Either way, it's
like
one
have
extreme.
A create a construct so that it doesn't necessarily. You kind of downplayed in your head the emotional significance of the moment in order to just get out there and fucking do it. It appears. Would that be a fair characterization?
That would be very well said. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Do you do that in general in performances? Like even not talking about like forgetting about all of COVID and shit for a second?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's kind of always like that. And that's been my attitude with the band since day one, and probably every band I've been in, is just like to not expect anything from anybody else but myself or my bandmates.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely helped me over the years, you know? So it's like, if it's a bad show, then, and the audience didn't care or whatever, it's like, well, that's fine. Cause I was expecting it to be like a total worse, catastrophe.
Yeah.
So that's why, if you've seen me smile on stage, it's like, oh, that's awesome. Somebody wanted to come and see us play. It's like,
so I know at the beginnings of the show, it seems like you're really psyched to see people out there. Like you're one of the guys in the band that I've connected with over the years and that, you know, we're always like, hey man, good to see you. And you seem like super happy that you're out there. I kind of use you as sort of despite what you're saying about how maybe you have jitters when you go out there or something, I kind of use you as a barometer as to where we're going, what's going on, what's happening. And like when you're rocking, shit's really going down, you know, that's kind of where that's why I kind of stand where I do. Cause that's the sweet spot, you know?
Yeah.
But do you find yourself kind of, let's look at that a little bit for a sec, if we could. I mean,
sure.
Do you get disappointed sometimes? Because if you set the bar low, then, I mean, I set the bar too high, man. I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. And like, oh man. And then I get nervous because I think it's going to be so great. But maybe there is a little part that says, hey, maybe, you know, you just need to just take a deep breath, be in the moment. Right.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on kind of like trying to be in the moment on shit?
Yeah. I mean, that's always the goal on stage, right? That's when the shows are really good, is when you're just not even aware that it's happening. In a sense, you know, it's like, because for as long as I've been doing, 20 something years now, like my body knows what to do. Like in prep for this tour, I was like, there's some of these songs I just haven't played in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I pick up the bass, it's like it's muscle memory, you know, my body knows mm-hmm. what to do, or that little part of my brain that stores all those songs. It's mm-hmm. already there. Oh shit. Now I'm lost. This happens a lot.
No. Just being in the moment, muscle memory, being out there on stage.
Yeah. Talk about being in the moment and I get lost. So
I'm here for you, brother.
Yeah. Thank you. So for the shows where I do get disappointed or I struggle or something, it's because I get pulled out of the moment. And it's usually just like, you know, the sound isn't great in my ears or it's a room that isn't necessary. Like, cause some of these older movie houses, they weren't meant for like a loud rock show. And it can be really tough with, especially like bass frequencies kind of like bouncing around or coming back on the stage or canceling out or something. So, you know, that's the real fight, is like, if something like that is trying to pull you out of the moment, how do I get back into it? You know, and it's the same thing with just, you know, that's a life lesson. It's like these negative thoughts come to you, and instead of just, you know, it's like you pay attention to it and you say like, well, there you are, but also goodbye, you know, like just let it go and then move on. And so that's something I try to be like really hyper aware of on stage, is that something bad might happen, and then, you know, respect the bad thing that's happened and how it makes you feel, and then just let it go. So,
well, it's very meditative quality when you kind of, you sort of just sit there, and I'm not so hot at meditating. Mm-hmm. I try. I love yoga. So I like attaching a physical, element to the meditation, right? So
absolutely,
it becomes physical and mental. But you know, observe that thought, acknowledge it, and then let it go.
Just say,
fuck off.
Yeah.
Right.
Easier said than done, but yeah,
it's all easier said than done. That's why it's called that's why it's called a practice, right?
Exactly, because it's always practice.
Yeah, it's always practice, man. It's always practice. But in your case, you're saying that to me and I'm thinking, well, you're fucking lucky because you're inside your the jacket song, man. And that's kind of another element to latch on to, right? You are creating music.
yeah, exactly. And, you know, and to your point, like, I've always felt really lucky that, you know, Jim writes the songs that he does and that I have four other guys that I can lean on, you know? So, you know, a lot of times I'll just look, you know, it's easy. Yeah. I'm always making faces with Patrick. You know, he's like my musical partner. I mean, all the guys are, you know, but he and I are married in a rhythmic way that's, you know, kind of tough to explain to those that maybe aren't in that role. But, so I'll just look back to him and he pulls me back. You know, we're kind of try and pull each other back into that moment.
Yeah.
You know, and sense when the other one is kind of going through something like that.
Well, a bass player has to have a relationship with the drummer, right? You guys are the rhythm engine of that mm-hmm. band, and it's a powerful rhythm engine. What does that feel like to kind of be in that zone? It's like the Jim, Patrick, Tom triangle there, right?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, because Jim's playing is very rhythmic, you know? So I've always felt like I'm kind of in between Jim's like strumming pattern and Patrick, as far as rhythm goes, and then like trying to listen to what Jim's singing, you know, what the melody is, and, you know, what the Bo and Carl are doing melodically as well. So it's a weird instrument because you're kind of doing both in a sense. Which kind of gives you freedom too. You know, you can play hardly anything at all and you're still serving a song, which is great.
Get off easy.
Yeah,
I could do just a little bit and like still, you
know. And I'll be fine. And it's only four strings, you know, so that's no big deal.
Yeah. Well, you rock the shit. And I don't know, somehow It Beats for You is coming into my head because I love that song and I love what you do in that song. And that's sort of a little bit of epitome of you being right in that kind of triangle. Not that other songs aren't, but mm-hmm. that's a good one in particular. Does that come to mind at all?
Just out of curiosity. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, because that was one of the first songs that we started working on for Z, and also like one of the first ones that we worked on after John and Danny had left the band and Bo and Carl had just joined.
Oh,
and
right,
so it was written as like a three piece, you know, it was just the three of us writing the song.
Ah, yeah.
So.
Ah, so there is a reason behind that. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
Right,
so right, it kind of right, makes right, sense. Right.
Yeah. That's one of the older songs on Z then, right?
Yeah, probably the oldest.
So in terms of the tour, is there a sense of relief that you have now that you've finished with the tour? You know, you guys played, for those that don't know, there were like three legs of the tour. Mm-hmm. You did, I don't know, I didn't even count how many, like 30
I think
or something.
22 shows total.
What's the kind of the overarching feeling from you and from the band just having finished that tour?
Yeah, it was funny because I just saw Jim and Patrick this past weekend for our buddy Craig's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And and people were asking us, you know, how it'd gone or whatever. And it's like, yeah, it felt good. I mean, I think it's one of the first times that we've done a tour like this where we paced it in a way where we weren't like overdoing it. A ton of like shows in a row and some fairly significant time off in between legs of the tour. And, it definitely paid off, you know, like as far as like our, just like the amount of energy that we have left going home, and, you know, just not overdoing it. So it feels great. I mean, there's that like sense of accomplishment. There's the COVID side of things where it's like, we just miss seeing you all so much. We miss seeing the audience.
Mm-hmm.
There's that feeling getting back up on stage and being able to play the five of us in the same room in person. So there's just like a lot going on, a lot to be kind of celebrating. It was good. It was good. I mean, I'm still exhausted. It's always exhausting. Mentally and physically and spiritually, but so worth it, you know, and it's a good kind of stint, you know.
Huh? Yeah. You're still tired from, okay. So we're talking now like a couple weeks after the tour ended.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
10
days, yeah.
Like 10-ish days after it ended days. In Chicago. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's draining for you.
It is,
Has it gotten harder over the years? Like, do you remember, you know, do you compare, like, I guess, because the last time you guys were on, like, a lengthy tour was in 2017.
Yeah, 2017 would have been the last time, right? We did some summer touring then. I wouldn't say it's any more taxing than that was. Less taxing than, like, the Waterfall tour. I mean, the Waterfall tour is, like, one of... you know, many times where we just, it's so hard to say no to opportunities when they come in. And then, you know, so we'd say like, okay, you know, like we're only going to do X number of shows this year. And it's like, but, you know, there's this great opportunity, you know, there's this festival and then this thing comes up. And so this year, what we really did, and, you know, thankfully hats off to Bo, for being the one to kind of spearhead this, where he's like, you know, let's commit ourselves to like 80% of what we really want to do, knowing that the other 20% is going to get filled in with these opportunities that we can't say no to. So that was the kind of year that we had this time. So in that regard, you know, it doesn't feel any more taxing than anything else has in the past, I guess. I mean, it definitely gets harder. You know, I'm 43 now. Started touring when, I guess, when we were 21, 22 years old.
Yeah.
Not drinking. It's been a little over 2 years for me since I've had a drink, and that definitely helps, you know, talk about being in the moment and just feeling rested and everything. Just doing that.
Is that like a deliberate effort to be sober or, just like not drinking? What's that look like for you?
Yeah,
it just was. Just because you mentioned it.
Yeah, I think I had gotten to the point where, I mean, I was probably drinking five nights a week or something, and then I was like, well, you know, so I started cutting back, and then got to the, you know, would take like a month off or whatever. So, you know, just like testing the waters, like how do I feel when I dial it back this way, or if I just have one drink a week or once a day or whatever it was, and then you know. Finally, I just got to the point where I was like just having one every once in a while. And I was like, well, then that means I don't really need it at all, you know? And I just felt better, you know? And hangovers for me were like, I just got super depressed, which is no surprise. It's like you're putting a depressant in your body that you might be a little sad the next day.
Right.
So it's been really, it's been great, you know, and a half years, 2 years, whatever it's been.
Was it challenging during the tour? Because like that 2.5 years was kind of a big 2.5 years in the world.
Yeah, that's true. Point, right? Yeah. Like a lot of people would be like, man, you stopped drinking like, you know, whatever, you know, several months before the pandemic started or something. I was like, it was actually, I think it was maybe easier for me because, you know, I was already okay to just like be in my head and like be in the moment and, so it was fine on the road. And especially with the kind of COVID bubble that we were in, it wasn't like we were really hanging out after the show with anybody, you know?
Right.
We would just kind of like stick with, you know, our little bubble.
Yeah.
And we didn't really have alcohol on the road at all this tour. And so it was good. And also like just after the initial few months or whatever, I just stopped thinking about it altogether, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's been positive all around.
That's cool. That's good. Yeah. Congrats or just like, you know,
thanks.
Good luck. I don't know.
Yeah. It's one of those things, like it's different for everybody, you know, it's like, so there's no like, right or wrong. It was just felt like, it
yeah,
was
personally,
right
I don't really get into, I don't really get into drinking that much, but I don't drink enough. I don't even drink enough to get a hangover. You know,
right. That's good.
I enjoy a couple beers. I'm a bigger guy, so I can have a couple beers, but
you'll be fine.
Yeah, it'll be fine. One more. Sure. No. Well, I'm curious because, you know, I had Bo on before all this stuff was announced. It was crazy. Like the day before I had Bo on, Roger Waters said he was going on tour. So I asked, you know, I had something to talk about Bo's and, you know, you guys hadn't even announced the tour yet. Right. So, And so when I talked to Bo, there was kind of a question, like, what was the future of My Morning Jacket? I didn't know. And things were kind of breaking right at that moment, sort of in May. Well, for the public, obviously. Right. For you guys, knew where the fuck you were doing. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you had the album in the can from like 20 early, even pre-pandemic. It appeared, or sort of like almost completed from what I understood.
Yeah, basically like on the cusp. Yeah, like all the tracking was done right before.
Yeah. But take me back a little bit in your head. You know, I want to get into your, a little bit of your background just to kind of, so for listeners and everybody can kind of understand where you've come from to get to the point where you are today. So this is amazingly successful band over 20 years later, really right. Interested in that. But since we're talking about tour and such, I was really interested in it. Learning what your thoughts were when you guys stepped off the road in 2018 and where was your head at that point?
Right. Yeah. So there was definitely like this huge question mark about what the future would be or if there even was one.
Yeah.
You know, and it was apparent that, you know, Jim definitely needed a break. And it kind of touched on this, you know, like the Waterfall touring was a lot for us.
Mm-hmm.
And for him especially. And then from that, we went into doing like Ray LaMontagne, and then we did more Jacket touring. And then that was kind of it.
Yeah.
You know, Jim put the brakes on, and it was good too, because like when we did the Ray LaMontagne tour, I was at a point, like I talked to the other three guys, to Patrick and Bo and Carl. And I was like, I'm not sure that I can do this tour, the Ray tour, because I think I need a break too. And so it was one of those things where, looking back on it, like as weird as it was, as much as, you know, it didn't feel great to take that time off and to kind of live in limbo, I think we all needed some time off, not away from each other or whatever, but just like, just needed a break from the touring side of things for sure. So it was strange. It was weird because I didn't know, I've never really had a plan B with this, you know, like I had a year of college and then was in another band, and that band flipped into another band and then became this band. And, you know, so I've just been rolling with On the Jacket train, you know, since 99. And then the year or so prior to that with other bands. And so for me, it was like, well, what do I do? You know? And I spent that time like trying to figure out what I was going to do, you know, like, should I go back to school and get a teaching degree, which was kind of on the path that I was on before. And then really thinking like, you know, like my resume literally just has like, well, you know, I played bass for a band for a couple of decades or whatever, you know? So it was super strange. And at the same time, the band was in this limbo state. And so I just had to, it touching again on me having to safeguard myself, I just had to assume that it wasn't coming back, so that at least I had some sense of like closure, even if it wasn't real, in order to like just move on with my life and not just like sit around, like, because there was definitely like a mourning period for me where I just, you know, started taking stock of like all the crazy stuff that we had done over the years together and all these amazing moments, and had to, you know, have like a tearful goodbye to that. And I think, you know, it was largely positive for me because so much of my identity has been wrapped up in this band.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like basically the majority of my adult life. And so it allowed me to kind of like, this is strange, you know, the whole thing is kind of strange to talk about, but, you know, to like kind of set up like healthy boundaries with it. So like once we got back into it, not that I'm like less emotionally invested, but I could just be like it's okay. Like everything's going to be okay. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Because I had already kind of gone through the worst. Like internally, I had already like come to terms with this is never going to come back again.
Did you fight against that?
Oh yeah,
I mean
for
when
sure.
You're, yeah.
I mean, not like I wasn't like, you know, calling the guys like, oh, we got to get back together. Like, what the, you know? But like internally, I was definitely like struggling with letting it go.
Well, it seems like I was just trying to ask. I'm trying to understand. Was it something that you had accepted? You went through that in your head. It was sort of like what we were talking about before, when you're kind of setting your expectations low. You're like, okay, the momentum's kind of like we're stepping away.
Yeah,
maybe
yeah.
Permanently.
And yeah, yeah.
You sort of prepared yourself for that. But were there discussions when you personally, Tom, could like pound the table and go, I don't want to stop?
Oh, I mean, I think we had all expressed like, hey, this thing is special. Like, let's, you know, it's important. It would be amazing mm-hmm. to keep doing this or whatever, you know, and we were all still in communication and everything. Like, there was never any weird, like, I'm just not talking to this dude anymore. You know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah.
No animosity or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just a weird time. Like, and you know, it's like any kind of relationship where you're going through a limbo period where it's like, I'm not sure, you know, like things don't feel like they're working out, or I need to take a step back or whatever, you know, or just need some time to myself or whatever. It's that same kind of feeling. It just happens that it's the strange relationship between five stinky dudes. Yeah. So, but most of that was just like me. I just kind of had to go through that internal kind of wrestling with what does my life look like without the band, and you know, and try to get to a healthy place and just like accept that whatever's going to happen is going to happen, which goes back to the like being in the moment and the meditative kind of
stuff. So it wasn't like accepting an inevitable result. It was like, okay, this is a possible result, but it's going to take an emotional toll on me. I kind of want to explore that and sit in that moment for a little bit so you could be more prepared for it.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I needed to emotionally prepare myself for whatever might, you know, like whatever might happen. It is just the way my brain works. It's just always been like that. You know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. I'm not saying one way or the other on it. No judgment here, dude. This is a no judgment zone.
Sure.
And, but you ended up going on tour with Ray, despite the fact that you were said that, maybe this is something that I,
oh yeah. And that was your
perspective.
Yeah. Right. Right. And that was like the year or two before.
Wasn't that like 2018? That was Ouroboros, right? The one.
No,
that
was 2016. It was 2016, so it was like right after the Waterfall tours.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah, which makes sense because then that kind of rolls into, you know, more Jacket shows, and well, there were Jacket shows throughout that entire period leading up to us like actually taking a break, you know, putting the brakes on.
Gotcha.
So at that point, you know, there was a lot of burnout for me. For me too, for sure. You know,
mm-hmm.
I needed a break.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everyone got a break too, which ends up to be like kind of a propitious event for My Morning Jacket, I think.
Yeah.
It came right at the heels of you guys being in the studio creating this new latest amazing album that's self-entitled My Morning Jacket, which I think is a badass move from a titling perspective. It's so cool. People are like, you know, like outsiders are like, they named it just after the band. I'm like, yeah, that's just fucking cool to do on your ninth album. I like it.
Yeah.
And so And you had this material, and then all of a sudden, the pandemic hit. But even before that, so you did these four amazing shows in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering kind of, I mean, I've read quite a bit about things that you've said about it and what the band has said about being at Red Rocks in 2019 and how,
sure.
Doing two nights there. What was kind of your thinking going into those shows, and what was your thinking coming out of them? And
yeah,
were those as much of a seminal event for the band in terms of its evolution as I've read?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because, you know, there was that question mark, like, what's going to happen?
Right.
And so those four shows, so what do we do? Two at Red Rocks and then Capitol Theater and Forest Hills. And it was definitely like a test, you know, like let's like the show should be fun. It's four shows. It's pretty like it's low pressure. It's going to be great. We get to play together again. We get to see everybody out in the audience and let's just see how it goes. And then, yeah, after, I mean, literally like after the first Red Rock show, it was like, this is amazing. You know, it was, you know, as you know, probably all five of us have said, it was kind of a reaffirmation of how magical it is when, you know, the five of us are able to play music together. Yeah. Yeah. And so, that immediately led into, you know, when that run was over, Jim was like, we should go ahead and head into the studio. Like, let's go ahead and book some time. And, we had had some studios in mind for recording that would have happened probably in 2018 or something like that, you know? So we just kind of picked up where we had left off, you know, it was like we took the break and then played some shows and then did the recording session that would have happened had we not taken a break. And yeah.
So was there really like a possibility, like you're thinking you're going to Red Rocks, it's entire Jacket Nation, basically anyone that loves Jacket and could go was there. Like, did you actually think you wouldn't have like, you guys weren't going to have some kind of epiphany? Like, oh yeah, maybe it might like, come on. You were going into those shows. You knew it was going to just be like massive or not.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Bit? Yeah. But there's still like there's always, maybe there's always a question. I don't know. Well, I guess there is because there's just no guarantee. I mean, that's life.
There's no guarantees. Right? I'm kind of posing it in sort of a silly, joking fashion. I'm like, and also, by the way, like this is an easy conversation to have because now it's all ex post facto and you guys are happy and we all love each other and everything. And like, and you know, all the fan community is loving the band. Not like that, not like everyone didn't always, but it's like now it's like Jacket's back. So it's easy to have. When I was talking to Bo, it wasn't so easy.
Yeah,
it was sort of in, people were in limbo for quite a while. So I was kind of like asking jokingly, like, come on, you guys, like you're going to go to Red Rocks. Yeah. You guys are going to get the fever again, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's literally like, it's the most amazing venue in the world. Yeah. So of course it's going to be amazing.
Was there something that occurred during that time that surprised you during those shows that was like, oh my God, we have, so, cause you hadn't been on a stage together since, OBH 2018, right? A lot of that had to do with Bo being out on the road with Roger Waters. Was there something that surprised you that when you got back out there?
No, I don't remember. No, because like you're saying, like, of course it was amazing, you know, and of course that feeling was the same, you know, I, you know, now that if I really think about it, you know, it felt, it was very similar, of course, to like playing any show that we play, but there was like this, it felt like a new chapter for sure. In a way that I couldn't necessarily anticipate, even though we had taken a break and of course coming back to it, it would feel that way. But that the actual feeling of it is not something that I could have like predicted. Like, you know, like really like, just pure joy and like relief because I had gone through all that stuff.
Right.
Internally. Yeah, no, it was really beautiful. And that was a nice surprise. Because I think that part of me that like wants to protect itself, like didn't really, you know, it wasn't going to be like, well, this is going to be amazing and it's going to, everything's going to be okay. You know? So it's like, yeah, that was a good surprise. Yeah.
That you were pleasantly surprised.
That, yeah,
that,
pleasantly
that it just kind of like,
yeah, that it was amazing.
I'm learning about I'm learning about you during this thing. In a good way. In a good way, man. I mean, it's all good. And those were incredible, incredible performances. And I'm looking forward to you guys being out there in 2022, which somehow in my gut, and I'm not basing this on anything, that's gotta happen.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, right. I mean, come on. Let's do three.
We just gotta figure it out. But yeah, of course it's gonna.
Yeah, let's do three. So, before we talk about the new album,
yeah,
it's been almost like you've been with the band for so long. Can you like, and you're from Louisville, is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I grew up, yeah, like right outside Louisville, like a suburb of it. Yeah.
Shelby. Is that Shelby? No. People always mention Shelby. I don't know where that is. You had a studio there at some point, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. In Shelbyville.
Shelbyville. Yeah, so that was, there it is.
Yeah. Our old guitar player, John, who was actually, he was just took off a few minutes ago before I jumped on the call. He lives in Idaho now in Boise, but, so his grandparents, had a farm in Shelbyville, and that's where we did the first three records were done out there, a lot of them. And, that's where we always had rehearsal and stuff. But so I grew up kinda, in
a, yeah. I was going to ask you if that's kind of near where you were, like where you grew up and such. Just
yeah, not far. It was like maybe it's like a 30-minute drive, like on some back roads. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in a little town called Crestwood. They're like counties next to each other. You know, I grew up in Oldham County, and the studio was in Shelby County. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Were you playing, so you like picked up the bass when you were 3 years old, they just threw one at you. Like, so what did that look like? What did you have? Were your parents musical? Did you grow up in a musical household?
Yeah. My dad, was a singer, and he had an amazing voice, which I did not inherit that. really, you know, just like, you know, kind of a crooner voice. So he was always playing records for me growing up. I mean, like super early on, I remember him putting on like Dark Side of the Moon for me when I was, you know, 4 or 5 years old or something, just to really like cool. See my reaction, you know, but he played a lot of amazing records for me growing up and really turned me on to things that, you know, I wouldn't, you know, like Rush or whatever. Like I didn't have any, there was nobody I went to high school with or middle school or whatever that was into Rush.
Oh, really?
Which was amazing, you know, because they're an amazing band.
I love Rush.
Oh. Yeah, I love Rush.
Oh my God. I was in high school when Moving Pictures came out.
See, yeah.
Kind of changed amazing. My life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm at the LA Forum and around that time, and they like just, you know, it was Rush when Rush was like, you know, they were like it was the time, you know, 2112. I remember just playing 2112 and I was like, what?
Yeah,
I was floored. I had like 10th row floor seats. I think we snuck down and just no one showed up. We posted up in a couple seats and no one showed up.
That's okay. Perfect.
Yeah. Right on. They were great. It was phenomenal. Anyway, so you like Rush. That was amazing era.
Yeah.
I know you cited like in an article that I read that you like Red Barchetta.
Yeah. Oh, dude.
That's one of my favorite tunes.
Man. I still love that song. Yeah.
Wow.
So he, you know, I kind of grew up with his record collection. Mm-hmm. And then I played like trumpet in the middle school band. That would have been like the first musical instrument I picked up, and did that for 3 years. And then, so it was like the, you know, that transition summer between eighth grade and starting your freshman year of high school. And I had some buddies that had like a power trio band, you know, it was like bass, drums, and guitar, Alex, Paul, and Keith, and good friends of mine. And so when school started, they were writing these instrumental tunes, and I was like, hey, you know, like saw him in the hallway. I was like, hey, if you guys need a singer, like I'll sing. And they're like, oh, okay. Yeah. That'd be cool. And I was like, but the deal is like, I have to play bass because I can't stand, like, I don't want to like just be at the mic with nothing. You know, I need something to kind of hide behind. And so we had two bass players that played like the same thing. Which is kind of amazing. So for a long time, just one guitar player and two bass players. And then my friend Cable.
I can't even think of a band that I know of two bass players.
With two bass players. Yeah, I think like Ned's Atomic Dustbin. I think they had two bass players.
Right.
And my buddy Cable joined the band on guitar. So things are kind of evened out. But like that band, you know, it kind of like transitioned into like how I got into this one. And then later I was in like my junior year of high school, I was in a band with Cable again. He was on drums, and my friend Shane on bass, and I was on guitar at that point. And my buddy Pat Nevins was the other guitar player, and Pat was the bass player. You know, after we had graduated and everything, he was the bass player in this band called Winter Death Club with these guys from like Pleasureville, Kentucky, and John mm-hmm. at the time, who lived on his grandparents' farm out in Shelbyville. And so he, you know, he's like, man, we're looking for a guitar player. This would have been like late 97, maybe, or early 98. And I tried out for the band and became the guitar player, and we made a record up in Cincinnati. And that's how I met Jim. Like, we, you know, we played shows with his band Month of Sundays. And I, you know, I think what happened was like Jim's band was kind of like falling apart, or like people were moving or whatever. And our band was also kind of going through the same transition. And the drummer for Winter Death Club, and then John, you know, he was a guitar player. They were playing with Jim on the side, like doing the My Morning Jacket stuff. And I had like a demo tape of it that Jeremy, who was the drummer on our first two records, mm-hmm. He had given me. And I just love the songs. I just listened to those songs like over and over again. Like Month of Sundays was on one side, My Morning Jacket was on the other. And a lot of those songs are like basically what you hear on Tennessee Fire.
Mm-hmm.
I was working at Blockbuster at the time. I remember this. I worked at a couple of video stores. That was actually my last job, was like as a manager at a video store. And Jeremy came up to my work, and we went outside and had a cigarette. And he's like, hey, man, you know, like, I think Jim wants to turn this into a real band. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever played bass before, but, you know, like, we're looking for a bass player. And so I, you know, went out and like bought some cheap, like $200 bass, and learned all the songs in the wrong key, and then showed up and, you know, had a rehearsal and stuff. And that's kind of how I joined the band.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What, so that was like 2000 ish.
I would have been in,
99.
Yeah. So it was like sometime in January of that year
of
99. Yeah. Uh-huh. So it was Tennessee Fire at that point, basically. You know, like I said, like that demo tape was basically the record. And maybe 2 weeks after I joined, they re-recorded like four songs. And and then Tennessee Fire came out. Yeah, anyway, that's how.
Are you on those four songs? Because you're not on the other ones. Oh, okay.
No, because they invited me. They were like, hey, man, you know, you should come up to Cincinnati. And it was the same place where Winter Death Club had done their full-length record, Ultra Suede Studios in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. It was the same studio where Babyface got the name Babyface. And it was owned by John Curley of the Afghan Whigs. And I was excited. I was like, yeah, like that would be cool. But like, it was just like a confidence thing. I was like, I don't really know the songs that well to do it. I think either John or Jim played bass on those four tunes that were done up there. So we went back up there later that year, and we did Strangulation at Ultra Suede, and I played bass on that. And we did a song called Weeks Go By Like Days, and I played bass on that too. So mm-hmm. those were my first two songs that I played on in the band.
And so then you kind of joined up with them, and was it sort of like pedal to the metal? We're going to book dates. We're going to drive ourselves around, go play in clubs. What did that look like in that early iteration of the band in those very early days after the Tennessee Fire demos?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, played a handful of shows at like, you know, just like small clubs around town here, like Sparks and Twice Told Coffee Shop, and record came out. Continued to do the same thing, basically playing in front of like 15, 20 people who are mostly our families. And I remember we played a show in like Chicago, and that was like a big deal to me that we actually played like outside of the state of Kentucky. And it was in Chicago, which always seemed like this.
Like Jim talked about that at the Auditorium Theater. He just talked about how like the importance of Chicago to him and to the band.
Yeah.
Remember that when he did that little break? I don't know if it was before the encore or in the last night.
Because it always felt like there was a connection there with, you know, like Steve Albini had recorded some Louisville bands, like, and, you know, he had done the Slint record. And so there was always like that kind of thread, or Bob Weston doing the Rodan record. So that it was like a big deal to play Chicago. We did Fireside Bowl, which was amazing too, because it was like one of those places that I had always like read about or seen pictures of. And
yeah,
that to me was like, I was like, I made it, you know, like in a sense. And that kind of goes back again to this like expectation thing. I was like, you know, like everything after that was just like, oh my God, like my mind's just blown every time, because like, well, we already played Chicago. So like,
right, you know, Fireside Bowl, dude.
Yeah, Fireside Bowl. It's amazing. People playing. I mean, I think you could still bowl. It's been so long, I can't remember. I guess people were bowling.
It sounds familiar. I'm not much of a bowler, but I don't know where it is. I know like Diversity Bowl. There's one on Belmont somewhere. I don't know. I got my older girls coming into town next week. Man, you've just inspired me. Maybe we'll go bowling.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good Midwestern activity. Mm-hmm. So playing Chicago, and then how long was it from then until you, so you played on At Dawn, the second album.
Yeah. Yeah. And we would have started tracking that next year. Yeah. Cause Danny had joined the band. So that was in 2000. Yeah. So we flew, there was like an article that was in a paper in the Netherlands that would have come out like in January, maybe, or late 99, or maybe early the next year. Mm-hmm. And it was written about the Tennessee Fire. I mean, it was like, you know, half a page written about the record.
In Dutch, in the Netherlands.
Yeah, in the Netherlands. And so, you know, like, I think it was like a distribution company or a promoter, or like, it was a collaboration of people that, you know, contacted Jim, and they were going to bring us over and played festivals. We did like a 10-day run in the Netherlands and in Belgium. And Tennessee Fire was like the number one record there for a couple weeks or something. And we had a documentary film crew that traveled with us. And it was like the first time that any of us had been outside of the country. And it was like a big deal. You know, and we did that a few times that year leading up to us recording At Dawn. And so that's kind of like how... That was our first like real fan base, was touring the Benelux, you know, touring Belgium and Holland.
Yeah.
Which we kind of did, you know, on and off until It Still Moves came out. And then we would have recorded At Dawn like that summer, I think. And that was done really quickly. Like we did all the basic tracks, or at least like all the drum and bass was done in a day. And we didn't like the sound of it. So then the next day we retracked all of those with like a ghost guitar and vocal. And literally like did the entire album, besides, you know, we had done Strangulation the year before, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but did all of that like in one night. Like I worked a full work day and then went to the farm and we tracked the whole record, and then spent the rest of the summer just kind of tracking, you know, guitars and vocals and everything else. But
yeah
my work was done after like 4 hours or something.
Yeah, well, that was a long day being at Blockbuster handing out movies and tracking all of At Dawn, which is
At Dawn,
this amazing rock album that's 20 years later. Looking back and just putting the pieces together.
Yeah, it's so
funny. Oh man. How did it change when Patrick came into the picture?
Yeah. So,
for you, I mean, as bassist and like, you know, and It Still Moves. And then, let's talk about that a little bit for you from your perspective.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So I had met Patrick like right when the band started. He was roommates with Jim and our original drummer, the first drummer, Jeremy, Jake Glenn. Mm-hmm. And they had this little house in Crescent Hill area where some of that Dawn and Tennessee Fire recorded, now that I think about it. And I knew Patrick just as a friend. He had toured with us in the Netherlands before he joined the band. And he was just always, you know, he's this guy that was always around. I always felt really close to him. And I remember we played the show like around Christmas one year, and our drummer at the time, Chris Giedig, like couldn't show up for sound check. He had something else going on, and so Patrick like sat down behind the kit and sound checked with us, and I was like, oh shit, like this is amazing, you know, like I always wanted to play with this dude, always wondered, and I was like, yeah, this is really magical. And then I don't know, like, you know, 6 months later or whatever it was, we parted ways with Chris and asked Patrick to join the band, and that it was amazing. I mean, I think we had like 2 weeks with him, and then we went back out on the road again and then started recording It Still Moves that winter or something. Yeah, you know, it was all in the same year. It was wild. We played like 200 and something shows that year, which would have been, what, 2002.
Wow. Holy shit. No wonder you're fucking tired, man.
Yeah. it's like the, you know, the kind of thing that you can do when you're in your 20s. It's just, just work yourself into the ground. But it really paid off, you know. I mean, that was like, I still think that I hope that it still works. The kids can still get in a van and just tour and meet people and sleep on their floors and
it's still happening out there. Talk to a lot of young bands and then shit's going on and working hard, just touring.
Yeah.
But that had a big impact on you to have Patrick aboard. He's a beast, man. He is an absolute fucking beast. And the two of you guys are just this like octopus back there of rhythm and sound.
Yeah, you know? Thank you.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah, I've had a few rare occasions where I got to like watch Patrick play with somebody else. I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah, did you get jealous?
Yeah, I do get jealous. I always miss playing with him. You know?
Did you always want to watch him with somebody else, Tom?
Yeah, exactly. But I didn't realize, you know, because I'm like so close to him, and we're just like kind of one unit on stage.
Right.
And then like seeing him in the audience, like really realize like how his energy projects out to the audience.
Oh man.
To like really feel it out there. I was like, holy shit, you know. Not that I ever take him for granted, but it's just like having that perspective. It's like he's just like you're saying, he's just a beast. So amazing.
When did you get to see him play?
I can't even remember who that was with. It was it like at South by Southwest, and I can't remember who he was playing with at this point. I just remember watching, you know, just watching Patrick. May have been like Bobby Bear Jr. or something. I can't remember.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, anyway.
That's an interesting perspective, though, like being like from my perspective, like watching the two of you guys, and especially like on these tours and that last show, the last couple of shows, like in NOLA and in Chicago that I was at.
Yeah.
The stage was so close and so low, and it was almost like we were right on top of you guys and vice versa. Right. I mean, what an impact, that has, you know, that energy that you guys, like, you know, we're talking about the transition into It Still Moves, which was that kind of level of just insane energy. And, I mean, does it occur to you, like, what's going on? Like, what is it from your perspective to, like, create that level of energy? Is it palpable to you? Is it something like, do you ever say, like, I'm just going to go out and I'm just going to rock the shit and just crush people's faces? Or, like, because you've been doing it for so long, like, what is that like now?
Yeah, I mean, I think I just go out there thinking, like, I just want to have a good time. Like the whole reason that I started playing, like why I asked my friends if I could join their band and be the singer / second bass player, was like, I just want to play music with my friends and just do it for creation's sake. And because I think that, and it's so funny because I was just talking with John about this, a couple hours ago. Yeah. With John McQuaid that,
It's McQuaid.
Yeah, McQuaid. It's like what we needed. Like there was something that we couldn't express unless we picked up an instrument and started playing, right? Mm-hmm. So I've never like lost sight of that. Like that's really the reason why like, that's the spirit that I bring to the stage with me every night. Like, you know, not like, oh, I'm really gonna, I mean, of course, like, you know, like I want to put on a great show for everybody out there, but yeah. It comes from like, it's something that I need to do. And I just want to have fun playing music with my friends. So that when I look out and notice that other people are like experiencing that same joy, it just lights me up, you know, like it just gives me the best feeling. So like that smile that you see, looking out, is just like, it just means the world, you know, that everybody wants to experience that with us.
Yeah. Well, to explore that a little bit further, what's the impact? Like, Jacket songs have had such an impact on me. Not only in terms of the lyrical power, the power of Jim's lyrics, mm-hmm. And what that says to me personally about mindset, how we move through the world, the universality of experiences, et cetera. We can go down that road if you want. But in terms of energy, like, what's your relationship with those songs? Because you're saying like, okay, I just want to get together with friends, but there's an energy like with Jacket songs that maybe it's just because I'm a fan, you know? I mean, prove me wrong. Like, I don't know. I'm going to challenge you on that one. I think there's a beauty of the energy of what you guys are doing up on stage that really propels all of you to another level within the nature of those songs.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And there's like just that unknown thing of like, where's the song going to go? You know, like what's Bo going to play here? You know, like what are we doing individually to serve the song that's going to take us all on a different journey this time?
Yeah.
So I don't want to downplay like how important that is too, you know? So it's like the initial. Yeah. Thank you. There's that too, you know, it's both sides. It's what, you know, like what I experience personally and then what I experience collectively, which is with those four guys and with the audience. You know, because it's the energy of the audience that drives it as well, you know?
It is.
Yeah. That's definitely, that's the other reason why I step foot on stage.
why you laughing?
Oh, just like, I was like, God, did I forget about that? But now, just like, it's just funny.
Oh, that might have fallen through the cracks with another interviewer, but we're all Jacket people on this day, man. No, it's about the energy, man. I talked to Bo a shit ton about that. It's fun to talk to Bo about it because, you know, we talked about that time when he first joined the band and that seminal mm-hmm. performance that's out there on YouTube that anyone can watch at Bonnaroo from like 2004-ish, 5-ish, and Carl had said. Yeah, something like that. He's like, Carl was like, yeah, we thought this was a lot high energy, but then we got up on the stage and, you know, the famous like, oh shit, quote from Carl about what happened when just this explosive energy that happens. And, you know, people that are listening to this are probably a lot of Jacket fans, but for those that aren't, I mean, it's insane. It's amazing, an incredible energy. And something that you said also that you kind of like, and we're getting off the track because we were talking about It Still Moves, and I'd like to get back into just getting comments on different albums and direction and touring in those kind of semi-early days. You mentioned that you were kind of like, well, I'm not really sure where it's going to go. What's Bo going to play and where am I going to go? How much is that a factor for you? I mean, two parts. One, that probably is keeping your interest, but also it's like, how much is unscripted in any one particular song of the songs that you actually stretch out?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think every once in a while there'll be like, Don Dante would be a good example where.
Yeah. Well, that came to mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Where like, and you would have experienced this at that Chicago show where he's like, cause it's a dark song. And he's like, you know, we did kind of this like dance beat in the middle of of the jam, and I'd really like to bring that back this time. And we were all like, yeah, that would be, you know, it's like trying to
make it a little lighter in the middle.
Yeah, exactly. But otherwise, it's definitely unscripted. And it's just about who's going to take the lead. And then that again is like, everybody is just listening, you know, talk about being in the moment. It's like, you have to be, and just be super aware of what any one person might start doing in the moment. And that kind of magic is always brings me back, you know, cause that, it makes the songs brand new every time. But then there's songs like One Big Holiday, which we've been playing since before or around the time that the Tennessee Fire came out. We've been playing that song forever. And we always knew, like, this goes back to the Still Moves, but we were waiting until we had the right equipment and production and everything to record that song, which is why it ended up on the third record. Mm-hmm. But you know, that's a song that's like, hasn't really changed that much over the years, but I'm still like so excited when we play it, you know?
Yeah. It's got some great passages in it you're excited when you play it. Tell me about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, and that one,
because like that's really, so fucking first of all, like, I know that you are, because it's obvious that you are, like, either or you're like the great, you're getting a fucking Academy Award, dude.
right.
A Grammy, not a great, and actor. An Academy Award.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's all about you guys, you know, like, that's the moment where it's like, you know, I'm just like literally just playing like three notes at the beginning. And it just makes me so happy, because everybody knows it's like, bam, bam, you know, like, and it's just, there's like, it, yeah, it's just amazing. That's amazing that people still want to hear us play that, like the 1200th time that we played it or whatever.
The power of the song, man.
The power of the song. Exactly.
It's got a great structure to it. And yeah, that's an interesting thing you bring up. It's like, you know, how can you be excited playing that song? Well, first of all, it's a great, I will argue that's just a motherfucking beast. Okay. But it's got the sections. It's kind of like Megiddo, right? It's got the sections, and like, I'm happy that it doesn't get incredibly stretched out, because I love what happens in those sections. And I want to feel those particular riffages, for lack of a better word. Oh, that's a pretty good word. Okay. We'll go with that.
It is a good word. Riffages
in the same way. And I'm not usually like that. Like, I love jam bands. I love when you go, when you guys in particular get expansive with the jams and such, we could talk about that. But, I want that satisfaction of hitting those fucking notes.
Totally. Yeah. Well, yeah. And I feel like it's important to have both. It's important to have the songs that are predictable, and then the ones that have these passages where anything goes. I think maybe it just depends on the band. Cause you know, there's some bands that like will play an album note for note and sounds exactly like the record, and it's amazing, and I'm so glad that they do it. But then there are other times I see bands and it's just like, literally, it's just people standing there playing the songs and like a little bit let down. So it just depends on what, you know, maybe it's just an energy thing. I don't know. I'm trying to dissect it myself, but
yeah, well, let's dissect it. I mean, something that comes to mind is Easy Morning Rebel, right? I couldn't tell you how many times you come back to the ending riff, like how many measures you go deep on that. But I know in my gut that it's going long. Right. And that's amazing. So that's kind of a different way of jamming that you guys execute so amazingly, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to like a Dandante.
Stretch out the ending.
Come on. Yeah. Man. You know, just that crushes everybody. And I think that you guys have a good time when you're doing that as well.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. I'm trying to think like where that even originated from. I mean, a lot of it was like when we first started playing and we were like in the Netherlands and we were playing in front of people, and like there were a lot of people that would show up to the shows, or at least a lot of people for us, you know, there'd be like 50-100 people or whatever. And we only had the one record. So when we were done with the one record, we're like, oh, you know, and they're still clapping. We're like, well, what do we do? You know? And so I think we got in the habit of just like ending all the songs by Like we had one where we ended with like a 21 gun salute, which is just us hitting the last note 21 times.
Nice.
And then doing the big bang, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da, and then doing it again. So I think there's part of the why we end songs the way we do is also just like a humor thing. Like we found it funny, and we probably found it funny at a show where like nobody cared. Like we were opening up for somebody else. And so we just did it because we thought it would be funny because nobody cared. You know, or people were standing there with their fingers in their ears or whatever. And then we're like, well, that was actually fun. Let's just keep doing it.
You know? Okay.
Yeah.
It's good to understand the sense of humor a little bit for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause we, that's kind of a big part of who we are and who the band is. It's like not taking ourselves too seriously.
Yeah. Yeah.
And seeps its way into almost everything we do.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh man, I got to bring that around full circle. But on the OBH note, though, and I would ask Jim this if I could, like opening with it at the Greek in Berkeley. So that was like a California thing.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. There was definitely a nod. Yeah, because you know, Darla Records. That first tour that we did, where you know, like we toured. I think it started in San Francisco because that's where Darla Records was located. And, you know, and I've never asked Jim like what the lyrics actually mean, but I've always assumed that line, bad man out in California, was,
I think he's talked about it.
Yeah. The dude from Darla, was James.
Right.
So I thought it was cool that we had our little nod to the Bay Area there.
That was a fun moment.
Yeah. Yeah, that was nice. Also, that venue is pretty insane, too. It doesn't hurt.
Oh, from your perspective, that's got to be pretty cool, right? That's almost Red Rocks-ish playing there, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool. The weather's always amazing, you know?
Yeah. You're up in like a eucalyptus grove. I mean, life could be worse.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. I think of so many Dead shows that were played there, too, which is amazing.
Yeah.
So kind of, we were talking about Patrick and the energy and the energy of the band. And we sort of went off and I took you down the, like, let's talk about like specific Jacket songs road, but which I love, which I could do for another hour, but, It Still Moves. And, you know, you guys were, finally together as with Patrick, at least. When did you kind of turn the corner on touring? I mean, you said you did 200 shows one year. Was that before?
Yeah.
That was before Bo and Carl joined up?
Yeah. Yeah. So it would have been in 2002. Wow. And that was, you know, so Chris was the drummer at the beginning of that. And then Patrick joined, I think, that April.
Mm-hmm.
We did. Yeah, I can't remember, 220 something shows that year, which is crazy.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. And then that immediately, like, we didn't really have a break and then went into recording It Still Moves. We renovated the studio. That was the studio out in Shelbyville. And signed with ATO and that whole deal. Like, you know, and management, like everything. It was all, that was all happening around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And we did It Still Moves, like in between, like I think we went to the UK and did some touring there. Maybe like our first time over there was in the middle of making that record, and kind of continued on in 2003, kind of touring that same way. Maybe not as many shows, but pretty close to it. And then of course, like completely burned ourselves out, and two of the guys quit on the same day during a tour.
During a tour, leaving you hanging with shows?
No. They were, you know, of course, like, you know, we'd finish it out, but we were in Europe at the time.
Yeah.
And who can blame them? I mean, it was like, it was brutal. You know, 200 something shows the year before, no break, record a record, then go right back onto the road. Record comes out, we're still touring. And, you know, it's too much. It's too much for them.
How'd you manage at that point?
I was okay. I remember, you know, we had this band meeting, and our manager at the time was like, So, okay, like 2003 has been great, but let's look at 2004 and here's all the touring. And John's like, man, like, I can't look at how my life's going to be scheduled next year at all. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, I'm really sorry. Like, I love you guys. I just can't do this. And Danny Cash was like, yeah, fuck it. I quit too. at the same time, which still cracks me up. And again, like, of course, they were just like, we were all burnt out. And after the meeting, Jim and Patrick looked at me and they're like, hey, like, what do you want to do? And I was like, hey, I'd still love to do it. Like, let's take a little break and then jump back into it and see what happened. Which is what we did. And we had discussions about like renaming, very brief discussions about like renaming the band and just being a three piece. And cause we were thinking about like the Soft Bulletin and these other records that have been done where it's like X number of people play on the record. And then when you go out on tour, it's like they're touring musicians or whatever. And it's, so we thought about doing that and just doing a record, the three of us, which is kind of where, It Beats For You came from. And then we started working on that record after Bo and Carl had joined the band that same year, I guess. It all becomes blurry after a while. We did something that we never thought that we would do is, we had like auditions out in LA that next year in 2004. Cause it was, John and Danny had left the band around Thanksgiving of the year before. So it's like January or February or whatever. We had heard, these auditions in LA. Bo was the first keyboard player that came in. In fact, I think he was the first person that walked in the door. And Carl was the first guitar player. And they really, they set the bar high as far, just abilities, just like being musical geniuses and then also just like personality wise.
Yeah.
Like just kind of immediately, kind of fitting in. And then we ended like that, whatever 3 days or whatever we did of auditions with those guys, like went out, had drinks and like, hey, if you want the job, it's yours,
Right.
And, jumped back into touring with them, shortly after that.
That's crazy that it was Bo and Carl that were, they were the first ones to audition for those spots.
Yeah. Yeah. It was wild. Yeah. I remember Bo showed up to his audition. He was pretty clean cut and he had like a blazer on. I was like, damn, like this dude's like showing up, like he means business.
Right.
And Carl came in and just ripped it. And he was playing like all the stuff that John played on the record, like just like note for note, like insane. And then like for the solos was kind of like doing some of his own stuff. And it was just like, it was just amazing,
Right.
And he just has that energy, has that Carl energy. It was crazy.
You like standing over there next to Carl and on stage. So what's that like being over there in that particular like energy vortex?
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing. Sometimes I just like, it's not like I stop playing, but I'll just like stop, like I'm just like grooving along and kind of like just let my body take over and I just like watch Carl do his thing, and then I'll look over at Bo and Bo just like knows that I'm about to turn my head and he turns his head too and like gives me a wink or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's pretty amazing.
No, I love when you guys get, I call it getting around the campfire when all the four of you guys are, the three of you guys are around Patrick and just jamming out like that with your back to the crowd, That's like when you guys go on the campfire, shit's going down, man.
That's right. Yeah. I think Jim called it like he said, it looked like we look like chickens, like pecking at something, like it's like dinner time or something.
You mean like the head banging?
Yeah, the head's okay. Just like around the kick drum, around Patrick.
Jim was kind of out of his mind at those shows. Wow, all over the place,
Yeah, he was having a good time. It was good to see.
I see you guys were cracking up too. It's some shit, a bunch of times when he's coming over and like,
Yeah, I mean, that's that's like the Jim humor too, is like Jim's going to find a way to make you laugh. You know, sometimes he'll just like do a dance move that will just crack me up, or, or like we had like a funny word that we were saying to each other, somewhere on the West Coast, we started it, and then he would like come up and, or I'd come up to him and we'd like say the funny word and make each other laugh, or sometimes on like the older songs, like Christmas Curtain or One Big Holiday or something, we'll like look at each other like, this is the note you're supposed to play. Like, we'll pretend that like we forgot how to play a song that we played 1,000 times, and that always cracks us up too. Yeah.
whatever gets you through the show, right?
Yeah, exactly.
What was it like at home during that time when things started to kind of pick up? I mean, were you like, are you married? You're married now. What's kind of
married now? Yeah. So yeah, if you're talking
kids,
like It Still Moves era.
Do you have kids?
Yeah, yeah. We've got we have a toddler here at home.
It's a boy or a girl?
Which definitely, boy. Uh-huh. Yeah. So it definitely like changes. It changes the dynamic of like going out on the road, you know?
Oh yeah. Today. Yeah, for sure. And, So this was a really good quality time. I mean, just to jump forward a little bit, I got kids, I had 3 kids. They're much older, like 24, 19 and 16.
Oh, wow.
They've all been to multiple jacket shows, by the way. And, nice. I brought my daughter to Meriwether.
Oh, cool.
She was like right behind me. Yeah. And she actually, nice. She was in front like a couple times for several songs. So she loves it. So that's a really good time to have been at home though. If you got a kid at home and, if he's a toddler now, was he born during the pandemic?
He was born during the pandemic.
Oh, that's perfect timing.
Yeah. Not that we definitely didn't plan it that way, but it, you know, I mean, for as like, as dark a time as it was for everybody, to have that time at home with them was huge.
Yeah.
You know, for the three of us to be together and my mom too, you know, it was like a small bubble that we had here. Mm-hmm. It was great for me to be at home for basically the first year of his life was,
How are you enjoying fatherhood? What surprised you about it?
A couple things. I mean, I think, you know, everyone says, like the joy that you experience is like just kind of unparalleled. And it's difficult to explain that or relate it to somebody that hasn't gone through it. But,
I hear you.
Get it. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
And then, you know, I always thought that I was a pretty patient person and then really discovered like, you know, when you're operating on very little sleep and everything else. But then just really like no matter like how exhausted I am, like the joy that I feel and just seeing his face and how he lights me up, makes it all go away, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it does. It definitely softened me in ways that I didn't, you know, I didn't know were possible.
Interesting. Like how?
Well, just like, you know, like I didn't realize that like I sometimes could like, I just like would get overwhelmed easily. I guess I knew that about myself, but I didn't realize like how bad it was or how bad my anxiety was or what anything, but like, you know, when you've got like a kid that is rolling around, you're trying to change a diaper and stuff and like, and like
peeing
just like coming to
you and stuff.
Yeah. And just coming to this place of like, well, whatever happens, just happens, you know? Like,
you can always clean it up.
You can always clean it up. Yeah. It's like, that's nothing. It's whatever. And then really like experiencing things for the first time again, you know, like through.
Yeah. Oh, that part only gets better, man. That part only gets better. It keeps getting better too. And it never ends also because you've always got this like fucking benchmark that's 40 years younger than you.
Right. Yeah.
It never ends, dude. Dude, I was just talking to my middle daughter, my 19-year-old, about like maybe like going out to California in the end of December, and she wants to go to Disneyland because I grew up in LA, so that's kind of like a thing. Like, yeah, everyone went to Disneyland. Like, I'm into it. I like it. It's fun. You know, that's a whole other conversation, man. It's just innocent, sweet, fun, and it's fine. Everyone's got problems with Disney. Fuck it, man. We can talk about it or whatever. Sure. I fucking love it. Like, nothing wrong. And so she's like, yeah, Dad, let's go. I'm like, yeah. And then you just got to like be there like with your teenager, like, and again, and it's just it, like, so that part never ends, man. It's just that is the best part. Just being able to relive shit, you know, all the time. Yeah. It's great. It's great.
It's amazing. Yeah. And just kind of see their personality to, you know, develop and who they end up being, you know, and yeah, you've definitely seen that.
Yeah, oh, totally. But yeah, to be at wit's end when you're tired and they're like, and I don't know, was he a good sleeper? Is he a good sleeper?
He is now. Yeah, he's amazing now. But there was there was like a regression that happened, which, yeah, every kid's different, but yeah. It was a struggle for sure.
It's hard. It's hard. Yeah. But you were so lucky to be able to spend that time. That's great time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was awesome.
And now being able to kind of restructure things in the future with that, you know, playing fewer shows and being at home and there's some, I was talking to Paul Hoffman, from Green Sky Bluegrass, who's got a little girl at home. I think she's like 2 or 3. And, talking to him about how, you know, and they still tour a lot, you know, and he was like flying back home, on the weekends or when he can to be with her and whenever he can. It's a balance. It's interesting to see how many people, you know, what's going on with that. Holly Bowling also is a pianist. She's played with Tom Hamilton and Ghostlight, and also is now joining Green Sky on the road as a pianist with Green Sky, which is an amazing combination. But she's got a little boy who was born during the pandemic, right? Like, she went on the road and did these online sessions, wilderness sessions, while she was pregnant during the pandemic. To see how musicians kind of deal with that. I mean, it's always kind of the road factor. You know, and having to go out, and, you know, it's hard on anybody that's even not a musician. You know, if you're gone all day, or, you know, you have to travel for work.
It's difficult to find that balance. I mean, I feel lucky, like, as much as technology, you know, we all feel the pull to like be on our phones or whatever, and we're trying to like go against it, like to be able to connect with family here while I'm gone is amazing. To be able to see him on camera every day.
Oh yeah, right.
Yeah, you know, I get to start my mornings that way. That's amazing. So
yeah,
grateful for that.
Yeah, you always have to start that with a disclaimer, like, phones fucking suck. However, they actually don't.
Yeah, it's true. No. It's like any communication device. It's like the intent was. Well, maybe the intent wasn't pure, but, you know, it's like there are amazing things that can happen. You know.
Well, it's not so much the phone. The phone's fucking amazing, man.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a computer. But there's a computer that's in our pocket. That's pretty amazing.
Crazy. It's social media and all that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Where do you stand on that? Oh, yeah. You quit Instagram for a while, right? Or where do you stand on social media?
I don't have any of it. I mean, it's the same thing as, like, drinking. Like, you know, whatever is right is a personal choice.
Yeah.
But I definitely found, like, after he was born, like, it's like such a waste of time, you know, for me personally. It's like, your time is limited when you have kids.
Right.
And I just didn't have time for it. And it's been nice to just not have that, you know. It's like, if I'm getting bored, which I think is, that's the thing about social media. It's like, instead of getting bored, people just like pull out their phones and scroll through whatever social media they have, Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or whatever. I can pick up a book, or I can just be bored, you know, like when we were kids,
we were
bored all the time.
Hell yeah. Right.
Yeah. And it was fine. We were totally fine. So,
That's a good point. Or just be bored.
Just be bored.
People are like, I'm lonely. My friends, they don't have like significant others and stuff. And I'm single now. And like, they're like, I'm lonely, right? To me, they're saying, I'm like, so be fucking lonely, man.
Yeah. Totally.
It's okay. It's okay.
It is.
Right. Right.
Whatever you're feeling is, it might suck, but it's also okay. You know?
So you are okay living in the moment then. We were talking about early, like struggling with it, but that's a profound statement to go, just be fucking bored.
Yeah, just be bored. God, I mean, I used to love it when I was, you know, basically grew up as an only child. I have two half sisters that are older than me. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so of course I was like, I was alone and bored quite a bit, and I was okay with it. You know, I had to learn to be okay with it pretty early on in life.
You had two sisters that were, I'm sorry, I didn't, you
they were, yeah, they were like 12 and 14 years older than me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they were.
Wow.
Basically out of the house by that point.
And yeah. Were they, did they have different mom or dad?
Different mom. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was just one of those things that, you know, both my parents worked. So I just learned to be okay with being on my own. And
uh-huh. How'd you fill your time?
I read a lot. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of reading, a lot of writing. I was really into creative writing, even as, you know, like elementary school age, and art, like visual art, I was really into. And then, of course, music later on. But mm-hmm. that was kind of what I did in my spare time. When did Nintendo come to North America? Like in 87 or something like that.
So a landmark event for Tom Blankenship.
Yeah.
You know. Oh, yeah. Well, I was a kid of the 80s, man. So I spent a lot of time in arcades, man. 82.
Oh, yeah.
The arcade, the fucking Atari, like, you know, Pac-Man. Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was a lot older than like junior, then, which is kind of sad. I was so into it. But who wasn't? Everybody I knew was like into
everybody
it. I loved
was
it.
Into it.
I loved it, man. It's just the competition. You know, I was athletic. So I was like, if I was bored, I went out and just shot hoops, you know, and did shit like that, right?
Yeah.
But man, I was competitive, and my friends loved, and we all loved the video games. And you know, you just collected your quarters throughout the week and just dropped them in and just played. And there was like certain places you could go in the valley in LA where there was like an arcade. Like, what's an arcade? Like, no one knew what that was. Like throwing the stupid, you know, like the boardwalk games and stuff. No. Now it was like an electronic place where you would have to go to a separate place where there was a Pac-Man thing and a Missile Command. You know those old ones?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. We had like Aladdin's Castle here in Louisville, and or Chuck E. Cheese, even, you know, like had like a room that was just dark that was all arcade games.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Amazing. Right. So growing up, do you have a good relationship with your parents?
Yeah. I did. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, my mom has done and would do anything for me and for us. You know, it's mm-hmm. been a huge part of my son's life and our life here at mm-hmm. home. And my dad passed when we were making Circuital. Like right after we finished tracking. Yeah. Shit. And we really got close, you know, it's just the way life works out that like we really got close like maybe a year before he was diagnosed with cancer. Mm. You know, not knowing, you know.
Yeah.
And so it was really nice that like we had that time like as adults to like really connect with each other.
Right.
So yeah.
But it's been great to live in the same area as your mom, basically, and having her as built in babysitting.
Yeah. It's great. And just to see her like it just reminds me, like, because she's the same way with them that she was with me, you know. It's like a nice reminder, like, oh yeah. Yeah, I remember mom. You know, of course, you know,
she's probably nicer. Like, she's probably nicer as a grandmother now.
Yeah.
they try to be on best behavior now. Maybe mm-hmm. my son will see me be a better think I was a better parent. No, I'm kidding.
Right.
I don't know. So was Z as much of a landmark change for you was it a landmark change for you as a band? Because that seemed like that was the album that sort of took Jacket to the next level.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Again, you know, it was following a period where we didn't know what was going to happen. And then Carl and Beau joining the band. And again, you know, we were still uncertain. It was like, well, how is this going to feel? And I remember our first show, I think, was in Birmingham, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we got up and did our thing. And it was like, look at like, if it just, you know, totally in the moment and then just kind of like stop and like take stock of, you know, looking around and like realizing these two new guys are with us and it feels amazing and brand new and, you know, and so that spirit, you know, carried itself into those sessions that we did, which is always the kind of cool thing about making a record is it's this kind of snapshot in time of where a band is and any given time or artist or whoever it is, you know? But yeah, so it definitely felt that way because having their musical input and their perspectives mixed in with what the three of us had already been doing, was really huge. And, you know, and we didn't know what that was going to be until we were doing it. You know, cause we were playing these songs that were older tunes. Yeah, so it was, again, it was just a brand new thing, you know?
Right. You know? Right.
Yeah.
Did they add things to the band that you kind of didn't expect at some point, like live from a live perspective? Was it sort of a feeling that, oh my God, we're really on to something now?
Yeah, for sure. Because when the band first started, I remember, you know, none of us had like real, like solid musical backgrounds. Like none of us were really like, you know, we'd taken lessons or whatever, but when we talked about, we were self-taught. And so when we would talk about, you know, like songs that were in certain keys, like the keys would be like a color, you know, the song's in orange or red or whatever.
It's like a kid's instrument when you're like,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, totally. And then, you know,
color coded for ease of use.
Yeah. Yeah. Which really worked for us.
Yeah.
And then Bo and Carl coming from, a very trained musical background. Right. And they taught us a lot along the way and it really pushed me, you know, later on, I would end up taking like jazz lessons and it was a good, you know, like that was amazing for all of us. And having their perspective on like what would work and what wouldn't when we were writing a song was huge too.
Yeah.
So like the, you know, the sound, just that you can obviously hear it, that the songwriting changed quite a bit between those two records. And, you know, whereas like It Still Moves was the sound of like five guys kind of all playing at the same time all the time, you know, very like alive. It was like, you know, it was us on stage kind of recorded.
Yeah.
And there were songs that a lot of them we had played on the road for years too.
Right.
And then Z was like very much a studio record. And we, you know, we worked on it in Louisville for a little bit as a three piece first, and we made demos and then sent those to Carl and Beau and then got together in the, you know, the same house and started working on stuff. So, you know, it was all, you know, we'd work through all that stuff, but it was still very much like a studio thing. There was a lot more space there. I mean, that was really, it's, you know, it's a document of the band finding its footing again and becoming whatever it was going to become or what it became.
Right, right. And now here we are with this, like the latest album, and we're skipping a couple, but
yeah.
I won't force you to walk through the whole chronology. Yeah. It's just kind of interesting that was sort of the point when you became what the band is, well, pretty much what the band is. I mean, what the band is today, I'll just say it.
Yeah,
And what was it like to get out there and play some of these new tunes? I mean, you had two albums to choose from, and you guys really did a great job at mixing those in, and they sounded amazing live. You know,
oh, thank you.
what was that like to get out there and play and with this kind of absolute new material? Like, what was that kind of like? And it was also sort of coming back from COVID. There was a lot, right? We didn't even talk about
a lot.
The new material.
Yeah. No, it was great. I mean, it seemed like most everything like went over pretty well and felt great to us on stage. You know, it was nice to, it's like a good problem to have when you realize that you have all these new songs and you're really excited about those. When you have all these older songs that you're really excited about, and some of them can kind of like take the place of each other. If you're thinking about making a set list, you know, think about the journey of that, and set list in a way is like the journey of an album and how you sequence that as well. Yeah. So it's like, it's cool to have the problem that we have like too many songs in a way. Like, there's not enough time on stage.
Yeah, from your perspective, because you get to go to every show, but it can be just like only a tad frustrating if you can only go to like 9 shows out of the tour or something like that.
Right.
Okay. I mean, finally, like I got to the three show run in Chicago, which was amazing because like he played everything and I got everything and I was like out of my mind.
Yeah. And it's great. Nice to do those multiples where we get to play a ton of stuff, because hopefully there's a lot of people that are going to.
Yeah.
Most of those shows. Yeah.
But you're saying that it's a nice feeling to be able to have when you're playing, when you've got so many things to choose from. Are you involved in the creation of set in the kind of the set list process, or is that all Jim?
No, the 5 of us kind of sit around. Like sometimes Jim or Carl have it in mind beforehand. But yeah, we kind of build it and move things around. Like we literally sit around like a laptop with iTunes open so we can see, and we have like live versions of the songs so we can see how the set list is going to work out with the time that we have on
timing
stage.
Oh, that's how you do it. You kind of like, oh well, we generally play this song, it's usually 7.5 minutes. Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, I'm not the most vocal when it comes to, I'm just not the most vocal or outspoken person in the world. So, you know,
yeah, I was going to say big shocker, Tom.
Yeah. Big shocker. Right. So, you know, I chime in when I feel it's appropriate, but yeah.
When was the last time you were like, fuck that, we're doing X song? And what song was that?
I don't think I've ever done that. I mean, there's some times where I'm like, I don't know if I'm feeling that song tonight, or what if we put this song in instead, or do we really need to play that one? But yeah, that kind of thing.
Interesting. Oh man, you're the best. You've been outspoken. What I've read a couple things about how you have you've worked either it's like in mental health or you've advocated for mental health for individuals. Can you describe that a little bit and how you've been involved in those type of efforts?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that really came from, that was a social media thing. I can't remember how long ago that was, but.
What do you mean that was a social media thing?
Well, I started making posts on Instagram, I guess, where, you know, I would post a picture, you know, like an older picture, and then I would tell, you know, the story that might be behind it. And I found one of this band that I was in with, you know, this was with, my friends Pat and Cable and Shane, and it was like our band like sitting on the hood of like my first car or something. And I remembered that like I had struggled with depression around the time that photo was taken, and that I had like locked myself in the garage with that car, you know, with it running, and had my next door neighbor like found me doing this.
Oh, Jesus, dude.
Yeah, and like walked in, and I don't know that I would. It's one of those things, like, would I have really gone through it or not? And I don't know, but obviously grateful to be here now. And I'm, you know, kind of opened myself up in a way that I wasn't necessarily prepared for with this post. And had a lot of guys are around my age, or, you know, in the 30s, 40s, 50s that reached out to me directly about it. And I just took the time to respond to everybody, and it meant a lot to me that they would share their stories and open up as well. I think that's, you know, that's kind of where that started. And then, you know, like the whole tone, I mean, it just changed. It was like, where do you go from there with social media? Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of changed. That can change the tone of a post from there on out, and started to focus more and more on that. So.
Wow. How long ago was that?
That may have been early in 2019. I'm not sure. Probably early in 2019. I think, I don't know. It all bleeds together after a while.
Well, that was an attempted suicide.
Yeah. 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 And that, and then,
that occurred, that was in 2019 or before? No.
Oh, sorry.
No, made the post in 20.
Yeah, it was, the post was in 2019. I mean, this would have been when I was in high school. So,
okay.
I don't know. Probably in like 94 or something like that. 94, 95.
Okay. Yeah. I was, okay. Wanted to clear that up.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was something, you know, like I didn't, wasn't something that I'd ever really been open about to anybody before. And
yeah, well, I mean, and that must have been really difficult. I mean, that's a really difficult time. I'm sorry you went through that.
No,
and to put it up on, what was your motivation initially to put it up on social media, which takes a shit ton of courage, by the way. I applaud that.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Yeah, it just felt like, I mean, I remember ending the whole post saying, you know, like, it's okay. I just feel like maybe there's this thing where it's like not okay for men to talk about their emotions and or for anybody to admit that they might be struggling like that. And mm-hmm. so, well, you know, if I can share my story and that lets people know that it's okay to talk about it and that they should reach out to somebody about how they're feeling, and also just to encourage all of us to like check in on each other a little bit more. Because a lot of times people are suffering and they don't know how to express it.
Yeah.
And, you know, fearful of expressing it. Yeah. So, yeah, I was just hoping that maybe it would empower people to speak up.
What did you think of the reactions that you got? What reactions did you get? Let's say.
I mean, you know, there's a lot of people just, what I took most from that experience was just that people felt comfortable enough to share their own experiences with it. Mm. Or, you know, a lot of them were like on behalf of someone that they had known. And it, you know, what it really made me realize is that a lot of us experience a lot of the same things, which makes sense, you know, and mm-hmm. we're only human and we all go through a lot of the same things, and that we're not alone. You know, I think that was the big takeaway, that whatever you're experiencing, somebody else is too, or somebody's already been through it. And why else are we here on this earth if it's not to help one another in some way or another, you know, and every day we have the opportunity to do that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have someone that you talk to? Have you been in therapy or talked to other people in that regard? Just kind of work through your own shit. I mean, I have for sure.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Still do. For sure. Yeah. 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 And I think I'm definitely an advocate of it, and it's been an important part of my life. Like I think I started when I was 13 or something.
Oh really? Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah. Like 13 through about the time that I graduated high school. And then on and off over the years since then, but
yeah,
it definitely helps. You know, it's nice to have someone to talk to that is impartial and,
right. Who doesn't have a ton of skin in the game except to help you. It's good to have someone in your own corner.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I think it's a little bit easier to open up.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You know?
Sure. Yeah. Well, someone who's objective and doesn't have, you know, like a horse in the fucking race.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. No, except to have your back. Zone. Yeah. Right. Yeah. How has that helped you? Do you still go?
It's been a while. It's been a while. Uh-huh. Not since we've moved back, but no, it's been hugely helpful. You know.
Yeah.
I think just having the outside perspective, and the biggest part is just like getting it out. You know, it's so easy for all of us to just get trapped in our brain.
True. Yeah, but that's very true.
To like just get out about it.
Right. Right. Yeah. Do you, from a creative perspective, do you kind of have, Is it easy for you to kind of be creative and put yourself out there?
Yeah, I think so. For the most part, yeah. I don't know, you know, just like as being like a super shy kid and then like getting up on stage when I was like 15 at a talent show and like singing in front of people. I mean, I think I was just, maybe I was lucky, or I think it's just human nature that there were people that were like, you know, like, your voice is so funny, man. Like, that's awesome. Like, keep going. You know, they're like, there was always somebody that was there to be encouraging. Which kind of touches on, you know, the mental health thing. It's just like, there's always somebody there that's going to be a champion of you. So,
right.
As scary as it is to put yourself out there, like,
I mean, you are a performer, you're a professional musician, man. You're out there all the time. I mean, the role of a bassist somehow gets kind of in this sort of pigeonhole of like, he's the quiet guy, you've heard all that, right?
Sure. Yeah. It's a bass player thing, right?
Right. What do you think of all that? It's all stereotypes, right?
Yeah, it's just all stereotypes.
Everyone's always, you say, got it tongue-in-cheekly.
Yeah. Though there's something about, well, I mean, bass is kind of transparent in a sense, too. I mean, if you ask, like, just ask somebody out on the street, like, what is the role that the bass plays in the band? People are like, I don't know, you know, like,
oh, yeah,
I can tell you what it is, street, but man. Yeah.
You could stop people on the street and ask them anything and it would be weird.
This is true. Yeah, at this point.
Right. So where are you now looking forward after you come back from this tour? You've had this successful new album that's out there in the world. Kind of what's your headspace right now?
Yeah, I'm just excited about where we go next. I feel like we just kind of cracked the surface of supporting the record, like getting out there and touring. And so I'm excited for next year to play more shows and hopefully get back in the studio again. And I mean, I won't say it, it's just one of those things, like, I'm just grateful. I've always just been grateful. It's like after we played Chicago, I was just grateful for every opportunity that came along. Like, oh, I can't believe this is happening.
Right.
So, you know, every moment that I have doing this is kind of, it's just one of those moments.
Are you feeling kind of like renewed after that, after this tour, like ready to get to continue on this journey?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I'm excited to have some time off and recharge my batteries for sure. But, it's nice to come off a tour, not feel completely spent, and be, you know, really optimistic about the future and excited to like get back out there again. Like, I know I'm going to be rested when we play New Year's Eve. That's going to be great. And then, you know, one big holiday after that, like, everybody's going to feel good and we'll be good for that. And, you know, it's nice. It's good like after 20 something years, we know how to like pace things and take care of ourselves. And,
Is there kind of like a new era of Jacket being dudes in their 40s that are going to kind of like pace it out there now and not get to the level where you were before? I mean, you need to do 200 shows a year. I mean, it'd be nice, but I don't want you guys to burn out.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And you know, you can't turn back the hands of time and
be
the person that you were back then. So yeah, you know, you gotta, it's that thing of like, you know, you got to listen to your body, or, you know, you got to pay attention and, you know, signposts have been there for a long time and we're finally doing it smart and, it's really paid off. So, you know, really the hope is that, taking these steps means that we can have a long career and keep doing this for as long as people still want to come out and, enjoy it and smile along with us and dance along with us.
Yeah. Were you happy from the kind of energy that you saw in the fan community? Sort of what are you thinking when you're up there and you're seeing, what are you looking at? What are you kind of noticing and the different crowds?
It's been great across the board. I mean, there's, you know, sometimes you can feel, because when we first started, I was like, it's strange. It's very strange for everybody to like, to not have a mask and be in front of a lot of people who also aren't wearing masks. So we're all kind of in the same boat. Like, this is strange, you know, like,
yeah,
it's, I think it's normal, but it's not really, because we can't, again, we can't turn back the hands of time. We can't go back to the way it felt before. Mm-hmm. And, so yeah, it's been good.
You mean, are you saying like it was kind of like divorced from reality in the sense that here you are, it's during COVID, but you're not having a mask on and you're in a place where you're not wearing a mask, sort of?
Yeah. It's like,
well, believe me, a lot of people weren't wearing masks in the out in the crowd as you saw either, right?
Totally, yeah, yeah. It was kind of a mixed thing. Like, are we going to be okay? Is it okay that we're doing this? And you know,
yeah. Well, there was a you guys had a COVID issue and had to like postpone a couple shows, cancel one, and then do another one at another time. Yeah, I forget what happened. So
yeah, we had to reschedule Atlanta, and yeah.
I mean, and that's not the only band that had that. You know, String Cheese comes to mind. Mm-hmm. They had something happen. But you guys got through it too, which was amazing.
Yeah. You know, everything worked out the way it was supposed to, and it could have been a lot worse. So,
yeah,
we feel pretty lucky. And, you know, it's one of those things like nobody got through the last 2 years or whatever without being impacted by it somehow.
Unscathed. Yeah. No one escaped entirely.
Yeah.
Myself included, as I told you.
Yeah. Recently.
Yeah. I mean, I got COVID, man, after the Jacket shows, like, and, for the last 10 days, I mean, I'm okay now, but it's been like, I don't know, like 10 or 11 days.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that we didn't meet in person. I mean, I wish we had, but you know, we're doing this on Zoom, but still. So it's nasty. And, you know, I'm just glad that shows are back and that we can continue to do that. You guys can continue to do what you're doing. And, but it's going to be there. It's going to be a continuing issue, you know? I wish everyone wore masks in the crowd, and if you know, but everyone get vaxxed is all I can say. Is just people need to be vaxxed and continue to be vaxxed so that this becomes something on the margin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. I mean, if you don't do it for somebody else, if you're not going to do it for yourself,
right. Well, what can you share any kind of plans for tours in the future, in the spring, summer, anything?
Yeah, nothing's really set in stone yet. Still trying to figure out routing. And so obviously one big holiday. I think there are a couple festivals that were announced.
Yeah, there's something in Phoenix. There's OBH. Right, Innings, I'll be at OBH for
OBH.
Sure.
I think there's one in Florida that was announced. And this is the thing about not being on social media, is like, I don't know when things are announced anymore. And now
I checked today. Like
So now I sound like the old guy that's like, what's going on?
Yeah. What's the internet?
Yeah. Super out of touch.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Well, cool. I mean, if you're talking about routing and stuff and you guys are going to be in OBH, that's great. So glad to have you back. And, this was, fucking awesome, man. Thanks for sitting down and sharing with me, man. I really appreciate you like helping me close out season two of Road Case. It's been really special and it's been a pleasure and a total honor to have you here and to look under the hood at Jack a little bit with you, Tom. Really.
Yeah. So I appreciate it. Like, super honored to have been considered and appreciate your time, and thanks for kind of going down the rabbit hole and letting it be a little bit of a therapy session as well. It was nice.
Oh, right on, man. That's what I'm here for. Anytime. I'm always here for you,
brother. Yeah, I appreciate
that,
man.
Yeah. Thanks again, Tom, for being here, man.
You got it.
Take care, man. Cheers. Okay. That was Tom Blankenship of My Morning Jacket here on Road Case. I was so, So psyched to have Tom here. You know, I love this band, and it was a real honor to have Tom, to talk to him, to learn a little bit more about him, and I hope everyone did as well. A couple things, just I loved hearing him talk about when Patrick Hallahan, the drummer, played with the guys for the first time and what that impact was like, you know, 20 plus years ago. And he was like, this guy's got to be in the band. And how he talked about seeing Patrick once playing with another band at South by Southwest and Tom being in the crowd and what the impact that had of the pure energy that Patrick puts into his drums, how Tom was blown away. And this is a guy that stands next to Tom at every show, right in the wheelhouse. So it tells you a little bit about the power of this band. Great to hear that Tom is now sober and that he's healthy and that he's made those kind of choices that are right for him, to just allow him to navigate his own life in the way that is best and serves him best. That was really great to hear. You know, Tom's a dad now. He had a kid during the COVID period. So, you know, I've talked to several artists where that's been the case. And it's so great when they're off the road to be able to spend time with their kid, because these guys are just on the road constantly. And this was sort of a theme with this in talking to Tom and my, and anytime I talk to someone from My Morning Jacket, you know, the hiatus and the striking realization that Tom had to have with regard to the band and how he basically said goodbye to the band in his own words and had to set some healthy boundaries with the band. But then at the end of the day, when they played those shows at Red Rocks in 2019, that limited run of two shows at Red Rocks and a couple on the East Coast, you know, they came back and Tom said he's, you know, felt that energy again, was in quote unquote pleasantly surprised in kind of his subtle, very mellow way of saying that he was fucking super psyched to just be back and that he wanted to play music with his friends again. And he wanted to bring that excitement every night and see the joy in everyone's faces. And that just lights him up. And I love hearing that from any kind of performer, let alone from one of my favorite bands. So that was amazing. But, you know, looking back, the band felt they really needed to dial it back during this renewed period of touring, that what they had been doing was just too much. And it was interesting to hear Tom mention that Bo Koster, the keyboardist, had helped spearhead the effort to only do like 80% of what they used to do. So for a band that liked to say yes to everything, that gave him that extra 20% little buffer that would not put them over and completely sap them of any energy that they had. And they accomplished that. They had a really successful tour. Tom said that it was nice to finally come off tour and not be spent, and that they're quote unquote finally doing it smart and it's paying off. And you know, he also said that it's going to allow them to have a nice career and do this for a very, very long time. So whether it's My Morning Jacket or any other touring band, to have that new renewed sense of energy when it's needed. Every band's got kind of a different timetable, different thoughts, tours in different ways. But to see these guys, it's very interesting to see them sort of manage it in a way that's specific for them and it's going to serve them going forward. And as a fan, I'm really psyched to hear that. So psyched to have Tom here. Thanks to everyone for being here for this year of Roadcase. And of course, this is a special season 2 ending episode 100. I want to thank each and every one of you for your support throughout the course of this year for this journey. I'm really excited to come back in late January with season 3 with some really, really amazing guests. So stay tuned to socials for updates with that. Thanks again, everyone, for your support. And I want to send a very, very special thank you to Tom Blankenship of My Morning Jacket for being here for this episode 100 of Roadcase. Thanks again so much for listening, and I'd like to encourage everyone to get involved with Roadcase. You can do so in a number of different ways. You can email me at info@roadcasepod.com with questions, comments, and even suggestions for guests. Or you can follow us on the socials, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We're at Roadcase Pod, and we have a YouTube channel called Roadcase Podcast. And of course, you can subscribe to this podcast on your favorite listening platform. And if you could please rate and review the podcast while you're there, that would be great. So I want to thank Waltzer for this awesome theme music that we have. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening to Roadcase. We have a lot of great episodes coming up, so I'll see you on down the road.